Welcome to the A to Z of Sex with me, Dr. Lori Beth. I'm an intimacy coach and psychologist. I created this show to explore the erotic alphabet, to help you learn more about desire and expressing your desires, discover ways to spice up your relationship and create that sizzling relationship you've always wanted. I do this through solid science, real life stories, and interviews with an exciting variety of sexperts. Listen in weekly as I share key strategies to help you create your ideal sexual life. Make sure you join us to access even more sexual strategies on my blog, A to Z of Sex. Access our monthly newsletter with subscriber-only offers at www.atozofsex.com. That's A-T-O-Z-O-F-S-E-X. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the A to Z of Sex. I'm Dr. Lori Beth Bisbee, and I am your host. We are working our way through the erotic alphabet one letter at a time. Just remember, this podcast deals with adult content, so if you don't have total privacy, you might want to put on your headphones. Today, the letter is U, and U is for untold stories. History is important. From the past, we learn. As human beings, we tend to learn best from stories, and yet so many of them remain untold. And this is true particularly when we're talking about stories about sex and sexuality. Joining me today is Mistress Nia. Mistress Nia is a service-oriented dominant and teacher whose style of leadership is first among equals. She has been active in BDSM since 2005, and her female-led household offers opportunities for discipline, education, and service. Nia identifies as a leather woman and is a member of the Sterling Shadow Continuum, SSC, and Mast Dayton, and serves as the chaplain of La Mute de la Rougarou, the Rougarou Pack. She is also a budding presenter in her local community, having recently given her first presentation for SSC. Mistress Nia resides in Southwest Ohio. Welcome to the show. Okay, so we're at MSC this weekend, and for those of you who don't know, that's Master Slave Conference. This is its 15th year. And yesterday, Mistress Nia was talking about the stories that aren't being told about a lot of things. But one of the ones that you highlighted was the place where Black lesbians were within this community, and even are, because we went from were to are within this community, and how so often you remain unseen. So I really wanted to interview you because I think this is really important. A lot of people don't realize who the people were who were looking after these gay men in the AIDS crisis at the beginning.
Right.
So where were you then?
Okay, when the AIDS crisis started, I had just come out into 12-step program work, into recovery. And in the Midwest in Ohio, there are meetings that are specifically for LGBT people. So at that time, I had started the meetings, and most of the guys that had been in recovery longer than most of us lesbians were the gay men. Then AIDS hit. We started coming to meetings, and then 2 or 3 weeks later, so-and-so is not in his seat. And you find out that he's in hospice. And then 2 weeks later, he's dead. And then the next one, and then the next one. So what we found out when we came into recovery was that we needed each other to stay sober. But then we have people dying, and now people are losing their incentive to even remain sober. I'm going to die anyway. I might as well go out. So we have people actually go out and relapse because of this. We depended upon those guys because they had already started and founded these recovery meetings that were opening and accepting to women. It took them a while to let us in, but once they did, we all became a cohesive community, and now these people are dying. They can't go back to their original families because families, we were still calling it the acquired. Before it was called AIDS, it had another name, and it made it apply that you could acquire this in an ordinary way. So these were hands-off people. These were people who were going to hospitals that didn't have training on how to deal with anything of this magnitude. So that's a piece of it. The other piece of it, though, is that even though the black gay men were associating with white gay men, when they got sick, there was nobody there for them. And because a lot of them worked regular blue-collar jobs, wait staff, busboys, those kind of things, they didn't even have the insurance to be able to take care of these astronomical bills. Medicare and Medicaid wasn't set up for them yet because the government didn't even know how to wrap itself around this crisis or how big it was going to become. So we became their beards. I remember once the person who sponsored me had developed AIDS and was in the hospital, but he needed to get his paycheck from work. So I pretended to be his fiance so I could go up to his job and get his checks and bring them to him, because there was no other way in this small part of the Midwest that anybody else was going to even let me. So we had to become each other's families out of necessity.
I think people forget that, or some people just don't know. Right. And it's not just young people who don't know. There are whole segments of community that don't know. So lots of people in the heterosexual community don't know, because all they were involved with was the media at that time.
Right.
They stepped back. It wasn't their problem. It wasn't their thing. It was frightening.
Right.
Because people were afraid they were going to catch this dread thing.
Yes.
So they didn't know. But people forget that at that time, being openly gay was not something that was acceptable.
Right.
Of course, at this time, it's not acceptable either, but it's a different thing. You needed a beard. You needed to pretend to be a heterosexual couple to get the things that right. you needed.
Right. But even more than that, it was even to be able to be invited.
Yeah.
So I remember several family functions that I took this man as my purse so that I would stop being asked, when are you going to get a husband?
Yeah.
When are you going to have kids? When are you going to do these things? So that I got to deflect all that. So within the black community itself, it was, you're seen and not heard. We know you're gay, but we don't ever discuss you being gay. You don't bring lovers around us. And Lord knows you're not going to bring any complications because of that. So if you're in domestic violence relationship, if you get sick, you're on your own. You know, so you had to pretend like you could still be saved into becoming heterosexual
God.
Again. And so the easiest way to do that was just to find a lesbian to cover for you, or to find a gay man to cover for you. And we played along. We played along a lot with this a lot. So when these guys are starting to die, they are afraid that we were going to reject them as well. The way that I found out that my sponsor had AIDS was that he had had a heart attack and he had been rushed to University Hospital in Ohio. And I get up there and the surgeon says to me, well, because of his compromised immune state, I don't know if he's going to make it. And I'm like, his what? Because HIPAA wasn't a thing then.
No, no.
And we're still now coming into what can be shared. But because I had come up as his beard, they just assumed that I was his girlfriend or wife or something. And so they shared that with me. And so I went to him and said, how long have you had this? And found out it had been years, but he was afraid that even us lesbians would reject him because he knew I had young children. Was I going to be scared that I was going to give this to my children,
yeah.
right? So there was a lot of communication that wasn't happening. And we just thought it was a white male disease because all the pictures, all the media
yep.
always showed white male patients. When you watch the movie Philadelphia Story, you don't see any black guys with AIDS in that movie.
And what's so frightening about that to me is that that stopped so much work being done
yes.
and has probably increased the size of the epidemic.
Yes.
Because information wasn't getting to the people who needed to have the information. Right. There was no cohesiveness. And I think that's another thing people don't get in their heads. Like, it's not one community.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Right.
It has never been one community. We work to make it one community, but there are the same divisions that you see in the world. So there are not only racial divisions, but class divisions
yes.
that come into play when you're dealing with stuff like this.
Exactly. And there were no lesbian gay centers. There were no, all these projects that people take for granted now that we're disseminating information they didn't exist.
Yeah, and one of the big elements that wasn't recognized was my own community. Bisexuals weren't recognized, and one of the reasons that that's important is because bisexuals did a lot of spreading of disease.
Yes,
because they weren't out and accepted in either community. Exactly. So it was something that really was mostly down low.
Right. You know? Right.
And people didn't know about. So nobody took precautions.
Right.
And I'm just a few years older than you. Mm-hmm. And I remember the early 80s. And, you know, we were out doing what we were doing.
Exactly. There were no parties where condoms were provided or any type of safe sex product. The other thing was that somehow, again, we got in our minds that this was a disease that was only going to affect white gay men.
Right.
So there was no education even attempted on our parts to find out what it was going to be about because we weren't going to get it. So as these guys start getting sick, as they start dying, they had to turn to us to go to the store to get their meds, to figure out ways to take care of them without even letting members of our own families know that they were doing this, because then they would get scared. And then I remember once my oldest daughter's father found out, and he was like, well, I should take you to court for custody of this child because you're unnecessarily exposing her to AIDS.
Which, of course, you weren't doing, because
exactly.
The only way that she was going to get AIDS from you...
Right. Would have been in vitro. Right.
That's right.
So, you know, so I still... But even with him, he made me take all these extra safety precautions that weren't even necessary because he wanted peace of mind that he wasn't going to give it to me. Right? So there were several men that... we all took care of. My sponsor was the one I personally took on, and he lived for 4 more years after I found out his diagnosis. I was hurt and devastated that he didn't feel safe. He didn't feel safe enough to share that, and he didn't want other lesbians to even know he had it. You know.
And what's one of the things that's interesting to me about this as well is that it came up for you within the recovery community, and as you say, you know, part of what helps keep people sober is that fellowship.
Yes.
So if you've got all sorts of people leaving the fellowship through death and relapsing because they think they're going to die, mm-hmm. it affects the whole fellowship, the whole
exactly.
group. And if you're a close-knit group, it's challenging to your well-being as well in more ways than what people think about, which was worrying about your physical well-being.
Exactly. So we go to meetings, we're keeping secrets, which we know for people in recovery is even more dangerous. It sets you up for another relapse.
Yeah.
Now you're having to hold on to these secrets. I'm having to hold on to other people's secrets. So what I found, though, the most interesting thing about this was that once we were finally accepted that we have to tell you all, because you all are going to have to help drive us to meetings, you're going to have to help get us to the hospitals and doctor's appointments and those sort of things. As these men started dying, we realized we didn't have any caregivers for us. So women in our community are at higher risk of developing stage 3 and stage 4 breast and ovarian cancer. Why? Because lesbians don't go to gynecologists if they're not considering themselves child in the childbirth game.
But let's highlight that, because that is something that will make some people's jaws drop. But it's true. Why would you go?
Right.
I mean, you should go.
Right.
You should be going, and you know, I don't use that word often, but women should be going regularly just to be checked out, just to know that their systems are working well, because early detection of things is important. So cervical cancer screens, even if you are not having babies, are important, right. You know, but there's a large segment of the community that thinks, well, really, gynecologists are about babies and birth control.
Exactly.
So they don't go.
Right. So we started having women developing stage 3 and stage 4 breast cancer and ovarian cancers. But the men that we took care of had died, so there was no one to care for us. Right? And then as these stories start being told and all these organizations start coming out, you're seeing men marching for AIDS, and you're seeing women at those marches. But when you go to a breast cancer walk, you're not seeing leather groups come out and march in support of breast and cervical cancer. You're not seeing gay guys come out with the pink shirts on and raising money at bars for jello shots for us. I think it's almost they've forgotten that their caregivers needed caregiving too. And so you have this whole generation of women who are 50 and older who started in the AIDS crisis, who saw all these men die, and now there's nobody for us. And that's where our history is still just, we're still keep getting erased out of the history of the movement, And now there's not too many of us still around to be able to tell the stories of what we did, right? So now we have the transgender group coming into the picture. And so I did a study and was gonna work on getting grant money for how many people taking estrogen are gonna be at high risk for developing breast cancer.
Because nobody's even talking about that.
Exactly.
How many people are taking estrogen? What are the effects of taking testosterone if you're biologically female?
Right.
But none of the research has been done.
So what are the long-term health consequences? And then when we get into the realm of BDSM, I start asking, is breast bondage, if you're at a high risk for breast cancer, should you be engaging in certain types of breast pain? Should you have your nipples pierced? These are all things that
And questions that nobody's asking.
Right.
And because it's taboo to ask.
Exactly.
You know, we don't, I mean, even talking about what it is that we do in the outside world, I mean, we've talked with a number of people about, you know, the 50 Shades phenomena kind of brought a lot of things to the fore and made right. it sort of titillating and interesting in some ways, in the worst way. And there were some positives that
right.
people found other people through that. But not actually looking at the long-term relationships, which is what people don't realize is what most of us do. We have long-term relationships.
Yes.
And so it isn't about the sex per se, that's part of it, but we have long-term relationships. And not talking about what kinds of additional risks might you be running.
Yes.
Because nobody feels comfortable talking about it anyway. And if you start talking about risk, additional risks, then people go, oh, you see, really, you shouldn't do that. That's why you should never.
Right. Or it takes the buzz off of your play.
Yeah.
Because now we got to discuss these additional health risks. So I know that I did the Brock test and found out that I was at increased risk for ovarian cancer and breast cancer. So now I know that if I play, I better have my mammogram. I better know that I'm not risking having a lump that could be disturbed by breast bondage. So those are questions I never even thought of, right? So as lesbians who don't go to the doctor to begin with, because again, like you said, gynecologists are about childbirth, we're not asking gynecologists these questions. So therefore there are no studies about what the long-term...
So they don't know that there's an interest.
Exactly. And, you know, just even being a lesbian, even if you don't engage in kink play, there's no real resource out there, especially for women who don't live in major cities, to have access to healthcare.
Yeah.
If you're in a lesbian couple in a state that doesn't recognize your same-sex marriage, you're not going to be on your partner's insurance, so you may or may not even have insurance that will cover these things. The interesting thing I found out when I contacted the Ohio Breast and Cervical Cancer Project is that there's money set aside for these groups to study because doctors and researchers realize they're not being studied. So we're kind of wondering, how did AIDS make gay men's healthcare a whole industry and gay women were completely ignored when we frequent the same spaces? So if you could find these guys.
Yeah, how come you didn't find us, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And why was there no real effort to reach out to us? When I go to pride parades, I don't see a breast cancer mobile there doing mammograms. But you can get AIDS testing on the spot at almost any conference that has gay men. I need somebody to explain that to me.
Well, okay, so I think that there's also an economic factor here.
Yes.
Right? So there is a lot of money in the gay men's community.
Right.
There are, and this isn't to say there aren't lots of professional lesbians. There are.
Right.
And lots of professional bisexual people.
Right.
There are. But the AIDS crisis made people stand up because they were at risk.
Right.
So the money began to be donated and given.
Yes.
There was never any mobilizing for women. So there's a very large financial kind of lobby there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, it's not coordinated. It's not that it's not there, it's not coordinated.
Well, here's the difference. And I've talked to many gay men about this.
Well, they're also men. I should say, they're also men.
Right.
And we know that they're paid more than women still.
Right.
So we still have that disparity.
So we're starting there with sexism in terms of pay inequality. But we're also talking, when I was asked to join the leather group, I talked to the gay men who were predominantly white gay men and said, you have two things that I don't have. Disposable income, because a lesbian of my age wasn't asked if she was going to have kids. It was, when are you going to have kids?
Yeah.
We know most lesbians over a certain age have a child or are responsible for helping to rear a child. So that takes away disposable income that you can go and have an AIDS benefit and pay $50 a ticket to get in. I got to buy somebody some gym shoes or some school supplies. I don't have time for this.
Right.
You're also, most of the time, if you're a lesbian, you're either involved in some type of caregiving, whether it's for your partner, your partner's kids, or because you're the lesbian child.
The parents. Yeah.
So now you don't have the time to attend these events, to mobilize, to go to protest. And we have to discuss that among the feminist movement from the 70s on, Black women were excluded and gay women were excluded. Yeah. We were talking about rights, and we were talking about rights for white, heterosexual females. And so when other lesbians started coming into the movement, there was a big old thing about that. And then Black lesbians are sitting back saying, we haven't been invited to the table yet. So now we got to go create our own tables. Fine, but we don't have the resource and capital to start up these movements and sustain them.
Indeed. And it's so, what frustrates me so much is that it just does, it never had to be that way.
Right.
And the fact that we're in 2018 and we're still having this conversation.
Yes.
And we're still in a position which people may or may not realize. This epidemic isn't over. Just because we have PrEP and we have things that we can do to ward off, first of all, it's not 100%.
Right.
There are other diseases out there. We've got Hep C. We've got malignant strains of all sorts of things that aren't reacting to medications. So this isn't over.
Right.
But people don't like the safe sex conversation. Now, I live in the UK, so we have healthcare, and that is a big difference.
Right.
And it's a huge difference.
Okay.
Because we have healthcare. So I don't think that it impacts the number of lesbian women who go to gynecologists per se, right?
Right.
Because you're going because you have a need to go.
Right.
But every woman's involved in the screening program, and they know they don't have to pay for it. So you get your letter that says you're now of an age where you need to come for breast screening.
Right.
You're being invited.
Right.
And this is where it'll happen.
Right.
And if this appointment's no good for you, call us. And if you can't get there, we'll help you get there. Mm-hmm. All of that is free because
right.
I pay taxes.
Right.
Right. All of that is free because I'm citizen there. And so it does create a bit of a different landscape in that we have access, but it doesn't mean that the education, exactly. It's the same issues in terms of education. Still not out there. And also, if you're doing BDSM, if you're in the leather community, you may have a doctor you go to, but do you have a doctor you go to who isn't going to find you a vulnerable person
mm-hmm.
because you come in with bruises all over yourself?
Or not feel that they have to report you.
Yeah. And that's like, I mean, I have had a number of situations over the years where I've had calls from people mm-hmm. who wanted me to talk to other psychology professionals to explain why they weren't vulnerable people.
Right.
Because they came into contact with medical professionals who felt that because they identified themselves as slaves, they were at risk and there was no way that they could actually consent.
Gotcha.
But also, if you show up with bruises, you can't actually consent to be injured. It's illegal.
Yes.
So if they want to prosecute you,
they can.
They can. And if you're gay or lesbian, the likelihood of prosecution is higher.
Yes. Or being deprived of employment or losing custody of your children and this sort of thing. The other issue that we still don't talk about is the fact that if you're separated from your family based on your sexual preference or based on your lifestyle preference, you don't have access to family medical history.
Right.
So I found out that I was having all these health issues, autoimmune health issues. But because as a gay person, I wasn't invited to family reunions, I didn't get to find out why Aunt Mary died and why Aunt Norma died and Cousin Susie. I didn't get to hear those stories. So I'm going into a doctor's office blind.
Yep. And the doctors aren't necessarily comfortable. So you've got that on top of it. I mean, you know, I also have autoimmune issues and And I know some family history, but I'm in the weird position of being like the first one diagnosed, and then the older ones got, you know, it's one of those very strange backwards things. But some of the stuff that I have lupus, and they don't know where that comes from in my family. It may not be familial. We don't know. It's not always familial.
Well, what I'm finding out, though, is that they're like, oh, yeah, she used to have rheumatoid.
Yeah.
Rheumatoid arthritis. Well, why didn't you tell anybody that? Oh, we just figured she had it because she was old.
Yeah, except that she had it because she has an autoimmune disease.
Right. Or that she lost 5 babies while she was pregnant.
Right.
Now, but nobody tells those stories.
Nobody told it. Yeah, that's antiphospholipid right there.
Right.
And for people listening, women listening, that is far more common in people of color. And I include Jews in people of color because we have the same genetic issues.
Yes.
So it is far more common. So if you have 2 miscarriages, the tests are easy.
Yes.
And get yourself checked out. And I am proof of what happens when you do that. I have a son because I got to a doctor and was, I live in England, so yeah.
Right.
Right. But I was able to get injections during the pregnancy so that I could keep him. But those are the kinds of things that if you don't know your family history. Also, if you have autoimmune conditions, you are more at risk for certain things and less at risk for others.
Right.
Again, if you don't know these things.
Right. So being a Black lesbian, you're put in an unusual position where A, you have to pretend that you're not a lesbian to your family. But if they even suspect that you are, you're excluded from family functions, which means you don't get family data. Okay, so you're at risk there. So now you're depending on this community of people to support you. And back in the 80s, those guys that used to support us died.
Right.
So now we're having, there's few of us, and we're in this unusual position now as older women. We don't want to see this repeated. We know that HPV is growing. We know that heroin, opioid crisis is creating a huge problem and decimation in our community. And it seems like those young people are now having to rebuild stuff that they shouldn't have to. Those resources for vulnerable communities, gay and lesbian communities, transgender communities, lifestyle communities, these outcast underground communities are still outcast and underground, right? So we got to start telling these stories so that we don't repeat these same mistakes. And these people aren't rebuilding the wheel from scratch.
I agree, but I also think that we actually have to ask the rest of the community to stand up and account.
Right.
Why aren't we having fundraisers and outreach on breast cancer? In the leather community, why aren't we doing that as standard?
Right.
We should be doing that.
Right.
There's no reason not to do that.
Right.
We have access to people that we know are not getting this information. There's enough of us. Why are we still only focused on certain issues?
The answer I got last night was that the lifestyle community is still male fantasy driven. Nobody wants to talk about diseased breasts because that's not a part of a male fantasy.
Wow.
Nobody wants to talk about a woman getting pieces of her genitalia lopped off because it's not a part of a male fantasy.
I know 3 women right now, 3 leather women struggling with breast cancer.
Correct.
Right now, right this minute.
Right.
Who can only look to their leather families because they have good ones.
Right.
Thankfully.
Right.
But they can't look to any wider community to deal with that.
Exactly.
But here's another one. Very common. Fibroids and hysterectomies.
Yes.
Do we talk about that?
Nope.
Nope.
Because it's not part of the male fantasy. Male-driven fantasy means that you're always available for sex. It doesn't mean that you have endometriosis or that you have polycystic
ovaries or any of that. And what fascinates me is, you know, sometimes you don't know, you know, as an individual, you can only do so much outreach and you can only extend your awareness so much. And I always feel like I missed something. I should have extended my awareness more, you know. But sometimes you don't know about the extent of a problem until you contract it yourself.
Exactly.
So I have surgery coming up in October to have a full hysterectomy. And I started talking with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed to find out how many women
yes.
who have had this for the same reasons
yes.
But none of the younger women know about these possibilities or any of the things that could be done to prevent them being in the position that all of these women in their 40s and 50s and 60s found themselves in, because nobody's talking about that.
Right.
Because it's not sexy.
Exactly. So my dream is that the next time I come to another conference, that when I look in my goodie bag, there are condoms and lube and a little thing to hang over my shoulder, over my shower head, that teaches me how to do a monthly breast check. That is my hope. And if it means that I have to put money out myself to make sure that there's enough of these to stick in everybody's bag, so that
I know
the men that get the bags make sure that if you have a female slave, that she checks. If you're transgender, female to male, that you get one in your bag so you can start checking for lumps. Men still get breast cancer as well. They can check for lumps. So that needs to happen. And these are simple things that can happen, but no one thinks of them because it's not part of the fantasy.
That's interesting. I mean, I know an organization, I belong to an organization called Scarlet Ladies in the UK. Mm-hmm. And basically we get together and talk about sex.
Right.
And the whole purpose of the organization is empowering women to talk about sex and sexuality and own sex and sexuality. That's the purpose. So different people come in and give different talks. I've done talks and I'm a member. But we had a talk by one of the breast cancer organizations.
Right.
This woman came in to talk to us all about self-exam.
Right.
You would be surprised the number of women in the room who had no idea and weren't doing it.
Right.
So she talked to all of us about it, mm-hmm. and we all came away with our stickers. They have a text in the UK. They have a text message notification system once a month. You can sign up and they will text you and say, today is the day you have to examine your breasts. That's simple.
Yes.
And they're a charity, so they give stuff out. And I'm sure if I approached them, even though they're in the UK, they don't care. The process is the same. So the shower things are the same thing.
Exactly.
It would just have a phone number that people wouldn't be using. But it still has the process on it. It still reminds you. I'm sure they would donate.
Yes.
But people aren't asking. So I think I think what we need to do is get people to account and say, yeah, we know this isn't sexy.
Right.
We know this isn't sexy. But a group of us are getting together because this is important.
Yes.
I also noticed, and I'll put it on record with you at the same time, which is that we have lots of talks about advanced directives and wills and what are you going to do if you die and your slave is still alive and all of that. We have first aid talks.
Yes.
But we're not having health and safe sex talks.
Right.
When's the last time you saw a safe sex talk at a leather conference?
Well, people assume that because there's PrEP now and you should just know about it. Now, I do know of a conference in the Midwest, the Great Lakes Leather, that there's actually a suite set aside so that people can get HIV tested on site. And it's open every day that they're open for the conference. And that's what got me thinking, if we can do that, why can't we show women how to do breast exams? Why can't we show their male partners how to help them or make it part of their protocol that they have to do a breast exam and report it?
Well, we can. And it's great that they test for HIV, but why aren't we doing the other blood tests that need to be done at the time?
Why aren't we checking for HPV? Which is caused the leading cause of cervical cancer.
And HPV, there is a vaccination program.
Right.
And in England, there's a vaccination. It was only being done for female teenagers.
Right. And here it's still only
3 months ago. 3 months ago, they started for male teenagers.
Okay.
So every teenager, as long as their parents don't get in the way of this,
right,
will be vaccinated for HPV. Because as far as the UK is concerned, this epidemic has to stop.
Right.
But why aren't we, you know, why aren't we testing for these things? Or at least I want to see a regular class.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
But I know why. I know what producers will say. People won't go because it's not sexy.
Right.
But we've got to make it sexy. Because people are still dying.
Yes.
And they're dying from even more stuff now.
Right. And the added cost to the healthcare system. If I can detect you at stage one or stage two, we can do a simple lumpectomy and we can keep it moving. When I have to introduce chemo, we start talking about the lost income to the families. Now we're talking a humongous, so even from a financial state, even if you don't even care about these women, it's costing the taxpayers' money to leave this entire population vulnerable.
Yes.
because eventually somebody's going to pay for it.
Yep.
So at some point in time, we need to be part of the answer, you know, and I realized that if I'm in a male-driven fantasy world, because I'm a male, I'm not going to think about diseased breasts. So it becomes the province of the women who are at risk to become their own advocates,
yep.
Which we need to be about everything in life anyway. But we need to do that, and we need to start saying, yes, let's just do it one class and see what happens and see how many women are sitting in there telling stories about the breast cancer survivors in their family, the breast cancer deaths in their family.
And the ovarian cancer, which is like the silent killer.
Yes. Let's just see how many, because I know they'll show up. I think what happens, though, is that as a woman, and me being now a mother of two, a grandmother, and a full-time employee, I'm like, I don't have time to do this. I don't have time or disposable income to go to all these conferences to do this, because I got some soccer games I probably got to attend and some birthday parties, right? So the people who are the caregivers are now trying to be responsible for creating more care.
Yeah.
From empty pockets and empty energy banks.
But there are, I mean,
we
have organizations, you know, we have leather organizations,
right.
We have female leather organizations,
right.
And we can task the female leather organizations
right.
to take this on as one of their challenges. Like, let's do some stuff for ourselves.
Right.
Let's get out there and get the message.
Right.
And we can talk to the male organizations and say, hey, it's time. We know this isn't sexy. We get it. Neither is prostate cancer, but they do fundraisers for that.
Yes, they do.
And it's not sexy, right?
Well, the sexy part is if I fix the prostate, then I can still use it for a sexual act. If I remove a breast, then it's no longer there for me to play with it.
But your person is alive to play with versus no longer alive.
Well, you know? So you just move to the next woman that has breasts.
Whoa.
Right?
Wow.
But we've seen it.
Yeah, we have. We have. Wow.
And, you know, and then we want to tell these glowing tributes to these women after they're gone. After they're gone. And I'm frustrated by the fact that I know that I cannot be, I'm not that smart. So I can't be the only one that came up with this. Why aren't other powers dealing with this? But I'm at the point now in life where I'm like, you know what? Stop thinking about what other people should have, could have, would have been doing. Just start saying it to people and getting them excited or angered or whatever button. After I gave that talk yesterday, I was in the vendor's booth, and one of the guys from Onyx, one of the men of Onyx came to me and said, when you said jello shots, you triggered me. And I'm like, well, how did that? What are you talking about? And he said, well, I sell a lot of jello shots, but I realized I've never sold one for a woman's cause. But women have come, the women, the Onyx Pearls have come to our events.
Always.
And helped sell jello shots for our fundraisers.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that started a thing, and this will start a thing. So if people want to find you, how do they go about doing that?
Okay. So I'm one, because my private life is private, the best way to catch me is on FetLife. My name is Mistress Nia, MistressNia. And leave me, I do check my emails every day. So if you want to contact me for ideas or to just continue this conversation, I'd be more than delighted.
Brilliant. Now that will be in the podcast notes. If you were triggered by any of this conversation today, and I know sometimes people are, please do get in touch and let us know, and we'll see what we can do about that. Today we talked about all the untold stories. We focused on the Black women, lesbian community who were instrumental in taking care of the gay men during the AIDS crisis. And we went on to talk about all of the causes, women's causes, and the things that are going on for women, particularly in, I hate this term, but underserved communities. So the Black lesbian community is one of those. The Black leather lesbian community is an even more underserved community. And all of the things that are happening now that nobody's talking about. So we're talking about breast cancer, we're talking about ovarian cancer, polycystic ovaries, domestic violence,
yes.
And that we need to tell these stories, and we need to be doing things about making sure that the healthcare and the emotional care is there for the people who have traditionally been tasked with doing all the caring. Who's gonna care for the carers? If you've got a comment about this, please send it through. Any questions you want answered or suggestions for another show, write to me at drloribeth@azofsex.com. That's drloribeth at azofsex.com. I'll answer on the show. Do follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, where I'm at Dr. Bisbee, and check out my YouTube channel. For a free 30-minute discussion session with me, discovery session with me, or strategy session with me, please go to https://azofsex.com/ and click on the button that says schedule now. I look forward to seeing you all next week when the letter will be V, and thank you so much again for listening.
Thanks for tuning in. You were just listening to The A to Z of Sex. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review here on iTunes and make sure you head over to www.atozofsex.com. That's A-T-O-Z-O-F-S-E-X. To subscribe to my free newsletter to help you keep your sex life sizzling. Stay tuned for upcoming weekly episodes as we work our way through the sexual alphabet to discover the wide world of sex, sexuality, desire, and intimacy. Knowledge gives you the power to create relationships that bring you satisfaction and joy. Hope to see you next week.